Hello and welcome to Growing Up B2B. I'm Ed D'Elia, president of D'Elia Associates, the place where B2B brands go to grow. For over 60 years, and now across two generations, we've been helping B2B companies achieve next-level growth through brand distinction, quality lead generation, and sales enablement. Growing Up B2B was created for family business leaders who are passionate about growth, legacy, and making a lasting impact. Whether it's a multi-generational legacy or multiple family members working together, there's something truly magical about blending business with family. And we want to celebrate that right here on Growing Up B2B. So be sure to stick around to the end of the show and find out how you can be our next guest. Okay, let's get into it. Hello and welcome to another episode of Growing Up B2B. I'm your host, Ed D'Elia, second generation president of D'Elia Associates, the place where B2B brands go to grow. Today, I'm speaking with Joe Carolyn, vice president of sales at Carolyn Packaging, a third generation contract packaging and private label partner serving brands across all categories, from industrial chemicals to consumer goods. Joe grew up in the business, has worked every part of the line, and today leads sales while guiding day-to-day operations at the company's Rockaway, New Jersey facility, with additional capacity in Bayonne as well. Hey, Joe, it's great to have you with us. Thanks so much for joining the show today.
Hi, thank you, Ed, for inviting me.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, Joe, give us a quick snapshot. Talk a little bit more about what Carolyn Packaging does today and the types of companies you serve.
We're a contract packager, so we do work for all different industries, mostly industrial, chemicals, silicones, paints, adhesives, things like that. Over the vast years that we've been together, we touched everybody, every type of thing that we did. I don't think we didn't do aerosols, but way back when we did powders and things like that. But yeah.
So is it mostly the types of products that would be dispensed from, say, an aluminum tube or a caulking cartridge, or what kinds of packaging formats?
Like behind me are some of the stuff we've done over the years. So we've done caulking cartridges, tubes, pouches, two-part syringes, plastic metal tubes. There's really not much we haven't done.
Okay. Right now.
And we'll try anything, but just most of our stuff is, like I said, industrial chemicals, though, final materials and things like that, solvents and whatnot.
So it sounds like a lot of things that would be construed as maybe more aggressive formulations, aggressive chemicals, where the packaging, selected packaging format and the filling were really needed to be have the right levels of efficacy and protection to contain the said product. Does that tend to be more of the types of products that you get involved with?
Yeah, we get a lot involved in most, like a lot of people don't want to touch the stuff that we do. We're not high hazardous, your normal maybe turpentines or say mineral spirits or stuff like that, fill stuff like that, but airplane glue and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But we do grease, we do paints, we did paints for Crayola Crayon, we did water-based paints for Crazy Art. We got involved in that slime glue craze, which was crazy for all parts of being crazy. Was obviously I probably gave him the wrong number because it was a Friday night, so I might have been out a couple. And then when somebody comes back and says, hey, yeah, we'll use you, I'm like, okay. And seven tractor trailers show up on Monday. I'm going, what did I say? That was a crazy time.
Sure. You've seen a lot in your career, but as the saying goes, somebody's got to do it, right? Somebody's got to manage these products. Yeah. And why not Carolyn Packaging? And that's a lot of what you're doing. But it sounds like you take on other types of engagements as well.
Over the years, we did a lot of things. Like we were talking before, you're talking about Star Wars.
Yeah.
When we had a conversation on the phone. And I remember back in the 70s when Star Wars came out, nobody knew about it. And they came to my father for blister packaging, all the figurines and everything. And I forgot, I think he was like 0.4 cents or something, like 0.0000 off. And we lost the business. You know, people say, it's a penny. You add a penny over millions or half a penny, it goes a long way.
Understood. So going way back, your grandfather launched the business. Originally, it was called Nalorac. And the family story, the generation story, includes a few twists and turns and some relaunches. What are some of just a spot check on some of the key chapters that shaped the company that's in existence that you now run today?
Well, obviously, my grandfather started back, I believe, in 1948. I'm not positive what actual year it was, but only a couple years after he started it, he passed away from cancer. He was a chemist, my father said, and he died when my dad was 14, 2 days before Christmas.
Oh my goodness.
Then my grandmother and my uncles took it over and were running it. My one uncle was worked for later on. He worked for Ortho, and I don't know if he worked for Hawthorne North Roach or not, but I know he was a mechanic too. And then my other uncle, he had an extruding business, but then he switched careers and became a journalist and moved to Trenton and wrote all nice political things for people
Wow.
that. And then the uncle above my father, Donnie, he with four boys, when you're younger, one had to go to priesthood. So he was becoming a priest. And unfortunately, he ended up getting a tumor behind his kneecap.
Oh no.
And he passed away at a young age of 22.
Oh my goodness.
My dad was only like, back then, he was only like 17, 18, somewhere around there. But a day before his birthday, no less. So my dad really didn't have a kumbaya, would you say? But I guess finding all the pictures and everything, because my parents have both had passed away. Recently, my mother passed away. So we're cleaning the house out and finding a lot of the old pictures. And I guess my grandfather had a pretty good business back when, because they all had cars. They all had real nice cars. They were dressed nice. My father went to a prep school. He has a Where do you go to a quarter rep prep school in North South Orange, West Orange, somewhere around there? And then I guess he got into the business the same way, but he had to have health care and stuff. So he went to work for quarter. Who did he work for? He went to work for Cody Labs, Pfizer, and the last was Menin Corporation.
Wow. Okay.
And he was a lead mechanic. He worked mechanics there, and then he kept Carolyn Packaging during the day. So he'd go to work at 6:30 in the morning, Carolyn. Work till 3:30 for at Carolyn, and then go to Menin and work to Menin till midnight or maybe a little less. And then, of course, you got to wind down. So you had to go have a couple beverages and then come home and start at 3 hours all over again.
Oh my
So,
gosh.
and so he was a tough guy that grew up in Newark. And then the family just, then he started Carolyn Packaging after, I guess, from I'm hearing something between his mother and him. Didn't see eye to eye, so he departed and went out. During Carolyn Packaging, he was, like I said, he was working for Menin and things like that. Then he had a place in Orange he sold, and he moved up to Morristown, right next to the Menin down the street. He was in the Hollow, is what they called it. So
Okay.
he had a little business there in the old school. That's when I started going there, my little overalls and tagged along with mom behind. Mom was the secretary, and here I am, like this big. And mom always told a story where we went down to the, there was a butcher down below, and the guy was making sausages. And I guess I pointed at the machine and said, "My daddy does that. He's got a machine like that." So that I don't remember saying it, but I do remember the place, and I do remember, unloading trucks, them throwing them off on the tires and bouncing them up and whatnot. And
Wow.
then,
So you literally have been around. So I think when we spoke before doing this episode, you had said you'd been exposed to the factory since you were around 5 years old.
More than that, since I was born.
Okay, even so, always. When did you know that you wanted to get involved in the family business as a career? Like, how old were you when you started to think, okay, this is what I think I might want to
It really wasn't, I think, so that's
do?
what I want to do. It's pretty much that's what you had to do.
Okay.
So it wasn't like you, that's what I growing up as a kid, summer school was one thing, that's probably like a vacation, and then there's a factory. So you were in a The original factory was in the building we're in now. I'm just over a couple doorways over. But growing up in it and wanting to do it, no, there was no wanting to do it because your mom and dad and mom pulling her hair out, having bleeding ulcers because we have no money and all that. There was never a windfall. Maybe there was a windfall 1 or 2 years, but all the other years growing up, like I said, finding all the stuff now, the foreclosure papers, the car being repossessed in front of the house, always having used cars and things like that. So mom always said, no, you don't want this. No. So in high school, I went out and I worked all through high school for the business. I washed dishes, I pumped gas, did tree work. And then in high school, I was in a work program where I went to work for a Cadillac dealership in town. And then I end up there instead of going to college and getting anything. I'm like, hey, I'm making $400 a week. And this is back in 1980 something, 86. And I'm like, hey, I'm making more money than any. I got a brand new Jeep. I'm living at home. And then fast forward, I crashed my Jeep. I ended up, life started moving faster. And then my ex-wife, which was my girlfriend at the time, became pregnant. And then I became a father at a young age of 22. So now, bam. And then the dealership was bought by the mafia and then they ran into the ground. So everybody lost their jobs. And then I went back to work for the family. And that was in 1990, yeah, 89, 90. Went back. I was only really gone for a little bit. Yeah.
And you circled back.
I circled back. And then now you're raising children, which was with it being a family business and everything that. My parents allowed me to be a parent for my children because my father, that was my big thing for my father. He goes, I wasn't around for you guys. And we were pretty much with a remote control on Sundays. Remote control and go to the fridge and get a beer. If you weren't traveling, going to see family because everybody had to see family. My dad would go to see my aunt down in Newark and my grandmother. And then my mother came from a big family and they were in South Orange, and then they moved Grandpa up to Pennsylvania. So we'd have to take weekend trips up to Pennsylvania and visit Grandpa. So we were always going a different way and only had Dad for one day.
Well,
So
no.
being
Well,
able to be the father.
it sounds like a common strand in your family is no one shies away from hard work. It sounds like a lot of there's a very strong work ethic, and everybody's no one's afraid to lean in and do the hard work when hard work needs to be done.
Oh, no. Actually, the best thing, my son gave my father his name. My son would come over to the factory and everything else like that. And my father came out of his office, and my mom goes, "Well, that's Mal's office." My son is only like four, maybe 4 or 5. He goes, "No, it's not. That's boss's office." Well, with that said, he's always been the boss. To the day he died, we put it on his casket and on his tombstone, boss. He wasn't grandpa, he wasn't papa, he was boss.
So for those listening, Joe just held up a sweatshirt and on the back it said boss in big block letters. That's great. So talk about really growing up around the business from a young age, being exposed probably to every facet of the business. What were some of those like early lessons that you learned, maybe from your dad, maybe things or things that you may have heard about your granddad that still influences you to this day, Joe? What were some of the early lessons that you still carry forward to this day?
But dad had a, he was soft spoken, but a big guy. And he always, I remember him saying one time, there's nothing above us for doing anything. Taking out garbage, dumpster dancing, getting on there, push the stuff down and make sure it's doing something. But when he was in the front building, we had a large amount of people. He was always kind hearted and he would hire anybody. Even if they stole from you and stuff like that, he'd give people a second chance and help out. And remember one day he was taking garbage out, and some guy was just standing outside. And the guy goes, he told the guy to take the garbage out. He goes, well, that's not my job. He goes, what do you mean it's not your job? Because if I tell you to take the garbage out, that's your job. He goes, that's not my job. He goes, that's good because you don't have a job now. You're fired. Get out of here. But nothing was, we were on the line, me, my sister, and brother. We did a thing years ago, which was a second company that bought us. It was a, we're pulling fiberglass rope in the middle of summer. On a loading dock, baking out sun with a guillotine, cutting a rope. Who was out there? Me. Who was out there when the coffee pots came from China or Taiwan and we had to unload a container of coffee pots? Me. Do you know how hot it is in a container? Yes. Very hot in the summertime.
Very hot.
Whatever job you're putting epoxy, this, that, and everything, there's nothing above it. And he would do anything. He'd always say, if you're doing, if I come out and I just see you're standing there, if your boss comes down and sees you're standing there, He sees you stand there. He doesn't care that you're running around sweating your butt off for 20 hours or whatever. He only remembers he saw you standing there. So that's always stay true in my mind. It doesn't matter. But you can have 1,000 attaboys, but it's an OFU that gets you.
That's funny. So definitely one of the lessons learned from hearing you correctly is it's you do what needs to be done and you don't think about, hey, is that my job? Is that my role? Is that my place? But if it's got to be done, you get it done, you know?
No,
And
he sat on the machines. He sat on the machines, ran machines. He
yeah.
fixed all the machines. That's the only thing I did not get from him. Did in the beginning, but then I gravitated towards everything else. He was a mechanic, real like master mechanic and stuff.
It sounds like that's in your blood, really, the ability to the mechanical acumen, and it was in your grandfather, your father, yourself. That's really, really great. Now, talking about you've partnered with companies from like ITW, GE, Crayola, government, some really big names, big brands across the years. What do you think those types of customers, those big customers, value most about working with Carolan Packaging?
Well, we get the job done and make them look good. That's
Okay.
one. Other than that, they don't appreciate paying you on time. 90 days to 105 days now. So that's a little crazy when you're paying out for all your everything else. So
Yeah.
we pretty much straighten them up really quick on that part.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, we do. We the bigger they are, the most unorganized they are, is pretty much what I see and what I've seen over my years doing things and stories that we can talk about. And you know how they want something from you, and they send you a purchase order that's 17 pages, and then they're telling you, oh, we're going paperless, we're going green. Well, you just sent me a book, a whole entire trade.
Yeah.
They're all over the place. There's not one I haven't dealt with.
Yeah. But then to your point, that's why they need you. If they had it all figured out, they wouldn't need you. And that's why they come to you, is to help you get it done. And as you say, you do. You get it done on time, and you do what it takes. So that's great. As far as,
I don't know if you're
oh, you.
frozen or not.
No, you're good. You're good. You're good.
Miss
The,
lost internet. You there or
oh,
no?
yeah, I'm here. I'm here. Can you hear me?
Okay, because you froze on my end. It must my
Oh,
internet. Yeah.
okay. I didn't realize.
So yeah, we deal with a lot of companies. We dealt with a lot of companies and things like that.
Yeah.
We've done a lot of different things for a lot of different people. Small stuff to brand new inventions that they never knew what was going on.
One of the things that you commented on when we first spoke was you said we don't have our own products, so we treat our customers like our own. So how does that mindset show up in the rest of your organization? And so we don't have our products, we have your products, but we treat them like they're our products. So how does that mindset, does that permeate through all the people in the organization? Does everybody carry forward that philosophy and that kind of caretaking mentality?
Yeah, obviously I drill it into their heads and stuff like that. Even though like I do not own the company, my name's still on the front door. So it still goes out with my name, my pride, and our workmanship on it, with all the history of my father and my grandfather. You know, that still's into my head. And a lot of other competitors of ours have their own product line to a point. So if something comes in that's theirs, don't knock somebody else off. They started doing contract packaging because some of their stuff is seasonal. So when that stuff's not there, they'll knock it off. So I don't have any own product of our. We do government contract work for my boss. That is, but it's not a product that's going out where it's going to compete. I've dealt with multiple customers that are competitors, and I've had stuff where you see behind me, one come in and say, "Hey, you can't fill that. That's my competitor." I said, "What do you mean I can't fill that? I'm filling a product. And first of all, that's my customer, so not your problem."
There you go. Getting back to family for a moment, Joe. Through the course of this discussion, you cited a number of serious family challenges, some family tragedies, one of which, I guess, a bit more recently, caring for not one but two parents with Alzheimer's. How did some of those family issues, events influence you, impact you, and maybe even how the way you look at life or the way that you lead the business?
Alzheimer's doesn't kill you right away. And the beginning of it and the starting stages it come slowly. You just see things, and a lot of stuff was going out. My father and working day to day with your parents, you're right next to them. There's people say, "Oh, it's a family business. It's you work for mom and dad." Yeah, you ever go tell your mom to go F herself? and then get in a big shouting match and then turn around and say, "What's for lunch?" or something like that. Or it's like, I said, "Are you my boss or are you my mother right now?" So there's always a fine line to certain things, but they're still, you still love them, you still care about them. And then with my father starting, I knew it was going on. I can see it, things going. And not to sit there and say anything about Joe Biden and stuff like that, I saw the same things my father did in the beginning stages, especially with the eyebrow and all this and the shuffling as he got as it advanced more. So there's a lot of other things along with Alzheimer's. My father also had he had sarcoidosis. It's a shadowing of the lungs and stuff like that. Could be from all the stuff we did in the past. And then he had a couple stents, his heart, and so there's other things that could have contributed to it. His heart rate went down, but running the business and still taking care of them, I have a brother and sister that helped in the beginning to the point, but it was more along the lines like, "Hey, he's okay." No, he's not. So as it progressed, there was challenges. He placed orders for stuff that I still have now from 2008 or 2002 that I don't use, or material jobs would come up short and like, "We have more than enough material. What happened?" And then we go to recycle our drums, and we bring all the drums up from the lower warehouse to put on the truck, and the guys go to throw them off. You're used to throwing 50 pounds, and all of a sudden you grab a 450-pound drum. Yeah, he's going to throw you back out. So, "Oh, I know where the drums went." We got the material now. So it was always called the biggest hide and seek. But towards the end, when it was rough because things happened along with it. Like in 2019, he got the medicine got him sick, pretty much. He got compacted and everything from the medicine. And he ended up in the hospital. And the doctors treat him for congestive heart failure when he was just constipated. So he's like full poop. So they almost killed him. It was like one of the worst moments of, and I'm a burn survivor. I was burned 20% of my body. So I spent 5 weeks in the burn center, and seeing my father go through this for 7 weeks in the best hospital, it was bad. It was really bad. But we're there every night, going there to the hospital at night, coming here in the morning, working, getting everything done, bringing mom over, coming back. So it there's lucky I'm owned by somebody else,
I
to
see.
put
I
it that
see.
way. So there's a God blessing, but yeah, working with your family and things with Alzheimer's, and got him out of the hospital. He lived for 2 years. We brought an aide into the house, but we took care of him like gold.
Wow. So you've definitely faced your share of adversity along your journey, that's for sure. And, you know, and,
You don't have enough time on a podcast or enough time in the internet to hear the real story of my life.
but here
As we
you
say in the
are.
fire service, can't make this shit up.
But here you are standing strong through all of it and still managing to put a smile on your face. So, you know, it says a
What are you
lot
going
for
to
your
do?
resiliency.
My father always said, "Today's the first day of the rest of your life."
Well.
The other one was,
But you made a great point before in the context of talking with your mother at one point, and you said, "Are you talking to me now as mom or as my boss?" Even in some of the narrative you just shared, it's clear that maybe she didn't, or maybe your dad didn't, but you had a sensibility of, hey, sometimes she's being my mom, and sometimes she's being putting her company hat on and being my boss. And at least you had the ability to distinguish between the two and say, okay, we're in sort of family mode now, or we're in business mode now.
yeah,
But my
well,
heart.
one, I knew what was going on with my father, and he was still functioning and coming to work, and he was getting a fork. And finally, she started driving instead of him driving, because one day he just got in a car and left. I thought he was going to pick mom up because Johnny lives around the corner. I'm like, "What are you doing here? Where's dad?" She's like, "What do you mean?" So I'm like, but he ended up disappearing, going for a ride, and I had to download a what I did a. OnStar, and we tracked him. And then it got him pulled over and everything. And it was interesting, but yeah, it's tough. But a bunch of years after, I forgot what year it was, but I came back from a bad fire one night where my mother and son were killed in the fire. And I came back to the factory. Our job was going in to find them. And so when I got back to the factory, I said, "You guys are coherent. You can understand." And I pretty much said my goodbyes to them then. And then, even though I was a caregiver and things like that, my personal goodbye saying, "Hey, I love you. Thank you for everything you've done for me, my family, the whole family that you've always done and took care of us. So I just wanted to make sure they knew that prior to going into the dementia.
Wow. That's really powerful, man. Thank you for sharing that. I'd like to touch on something else that you just referenced. A 34-year volunteer firefighter, a former fire chief. So that's quite an impressive run. Talk about that for a minute, Joe. What are some of the leadership or safety disciplines that maybe you've carried from the firehouse into the factory floor? How does being a volunteer firefighter and even former chief influence either how you approach the business, how you engage with people, how you look at safety and things like that?
We'll go back on the chief part, being a volunteer fire chief. It's hard to give orders to somebody not getting paid and it's sure. risking their lives.
Yeah.
And my father always had a saying, when everybody left work, he always said goodbye to them and thank you. And for years, I'm looking and going, why are you saying thank you? They're working for you. They should be saying thank you to you. He goes, no. Yes, they're working for me, but they don't need to work for me. So you treat everybody as you want to be treated. And a lot of people think the boss is up here and the boss is above you. No, the boss, if you treat, get more respect. You're not given respect. You have to earn respect, especially in a fire service. When it's for free, you have a lot of people that want to have the power and they want to have everything else, but they don't want to do the work and get down and dirty and get in. Like I said, I was a burn survivor. I was burned 2 years in being a volunteer fireman. Here I am, 34 years, still at 50, I'm going to be 58, running and burning buildings. We have awards over here for saving a fireman's life because my parents allow me to take care of my children, pick my kids up from daycare, from kindergarten, feed them lunch, and then bring them to daycare. On Valentine's Day 2004, we had a house fire in the next town, and they called us, and as soon as we got there, everything hit the fan, and the fireman was trapped in the basement. And our job was to go inside and pull him out and save his life, which we did. And we got awards, accolades, up and down. It was like talked all over the country. So not even just doing that, but being allowed to leave the factory to do it and then come back and just jump right back in. And, oh, okay, let's load a truck. Let's run a machine. They don't know what I did. I went on a car accident where people were killed. Come back, sit down. For two square mile town, we've seen a lot.
I guess so. I guess so.
Every firefighter's seen a lot. And
yeah.
There's a need for us.
Yeah. The end of that speaks to not only your service, but also I can't even fully comprehend the courage it must have taken to go and do that. And most people's inclination would be to run the other way. I want to go the other way. You're running into it to save a life.
I didn't get hurt in fire. I got hurt. I had a trauma hot water blow up in my face. So. So fire was not, burns a burn.
Sure. Something else, a recent development that I wanted to touch on. Recently, your wife just joined the business in supporting billing and some customer service roles. What's that been like? The now working, not just being a husband and wife, but now working in the business together. Talk about that for a minute.
She's just still breaking in. She still hasn't totally let go of her job. Keep calling her back, but I think we're getting like 2 days a week now, maybe something. But yesterday was a full day, second full day. And we're catching up. We're doing, like I said, the whole place since 2019 has been in shambles. All I've been doing is doing work and taking care of people. And like a fireman, putting fires out for everybody else and not taking care of and doing things like that.
Yeah.
My parents had systems years ago, but. And my mom just, no, I'm not doing that now. No, I'm not touching QuickBooks. Nope. She'd pull up an invoice and then make it, print it out three times, and delete it. And then it would be pricing from 5 years ago. And I'm like, I can't send that out. And everything just gets backlogged. So we're catching up on the backlog and trying to move forward and get a system, talking to clients and some of our vendors of seeing what they use. I'm not going to go out and buy a big EDI system, some Microsoft or something like that. For 20 customers or for one guy, just because that's what they want.
Mm-hmm.
It worked out yesterday. She was happy. I mean, instead of me sitting there going and doing every single solitary thing, it was good. And then so now she knows what I actually do. Because I don't even know what I actually do. Like I told you when you said, what do you do for a living? I don't know. The most thing I do is I put shit where it belongs.
It sounds early indications are that it's good, and she's gonna maybe help clean house a little bit and put some things in order,
Yeah, and put some protocols back in order and things like that where
and divide and conquer and help you out where it's you can only do so much in a given day, and now you've got not only a second set of hands, but one that very closely trust in a very deep way. So I wish you good luck in that relationship as it takes the next level in a business relationship.
Well, mom and dad made it 65 years almost together.
Wow.
They worked, they mom worked for dad the whole time.
Wow. That's impressive. That's really impressive. So, taking a look back at your entire journey to this point, what's been the most rewarding part of being part of Carolyn Packaging, being part of this family business? What, when you look back, say, what's really been the thing that's most rewarding in your mind, Joe?
I said the most rewarding in this part. When we're younger, it was tough when we were younger. That's life. You never, ever since grade school, if you wanted something, you had to buy it. You wanted Nikes, you had to buy them. If not, you got jocks and you got Kmart and you got that. So the most rewarding is showing you how much money, not how much money, how to be respectful of money instead of just throwing around and buying and living up to other people's expectations. Because I've been through that a couple of times in the past. So the rewarding part was I was allowed to be able to raise my children, and I was able to take care of my parents at their final hour, talking to my father and dealing with clients and hearing from clients. Because like we talked, I have a whole list of you for other family-owned businesses that we deal with directly. So I want to say half my customers are family-owned husband and wife businesses. Yeah. So they know the triumph and everything else like that, the what you go through and things like that.
That's awesome.
But rewarding giving the customer a nice product, good price, and keep it in the country, keep working it. I'm excited about what's going on. And not right now with the tariffs because I just got hit really bad with the job that's coming up. It's going to cost a lot of money. But other than that, I like to focus on America.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you. So, a lot of the people listening in are obviously other family businesses, and some of them are actually young people who are maybe in their 20s, maybe young 30s, who are at what I'll call a crossroads. So they maybe know that there's a family business that, and they're asking themselves, Joe, should I join the family business or should I go my own way and take a different path? So if you were to give a young person a piece of advice relative to should they join their family's business or should they go their own way, what might you tell them?
Right now, like I said, I'm owned by somebody else. So it's a little, I have a unique what's going on, but I do in the back of my head wish I knew more as a child when we were in the front building and we had everything. I think we had 50. I have five people working for me now. Back then, we had 58. Shift and a half. We're doing work for Hartz Mountain. But all the companies you think about that we're doing work for are no longer around. You think about all this stuff that was out there and all the work that we did. But I just wish I knew more about the ins and outs because I don't know about the taxes, insurance, all that stuff because I wasn't involved in that and I'm not involved in it now. So when it comes at going into a family business, there's a lot of family business at a crossroad that you went through with your family business to take it on or not to. And you have your own, you probably have your own spin on it than your father had on his, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's but you got to be married to it,
Yes, you do.
and there's gonna be ups and downs, and you're not gonna eat, you're not gonna go on vacation, you're not gonna do a whole bunch of stuff. Or if you are, you're being successful, and if you're successful at it, be cautious of being how successful you are, because you don't want to be that successful and be way up here, and all of a sudden, boom, get cut out, and you have nothing. I've seen it with many people inside our community that. Living high on the hog because they had a big contract. And then one day somebody forgot to put submit for the contract. And guess what? Next year they have no work.
I've seen it happen, and I've seen a lot of people ride right into debt and all kinds of things. But so I think if I'm hearing you correctly, learn as much as you can, go be as informed as you can when you make that decision, but also recognize that in no way is it a free pass or a free ride, that you're going to work hard, you're going to have to work hard, and you're going to see your days of glory, and you're going to see your days of your dark days as well. And having the tenacity to ride through it all and find a balance point. I always found that was hard in my journey, especially as a younger fellow, that the highs would be really high, the lows would be really low. And it took me a while to really say, you've got to be balanced emotionally and know that there's going to be both. And it's never
and
going
that's
to
the
be
hardest
perfect.
part. That's the hardest part about life and everything.
Yeah.
I take what I've done in the fire service, because you can't go screaming with your head chopped off. You got to be
Yeah.
calm to a point,
Yeah.
you know, where something's going on, and you definitely don't want the one going, oh my God.
So looking ahead now, thinking about Carillon Packaging, maybe in the next 3 to 5 years, where do you see the business going in terms of capabilities, customers, your team? What do you see when you look to the future?
That's why I bring my wife in, so we can get a handle on what the situation is here. What are we doing? What's making us profit and things like that. And then see, because in 3 to 5 years, you always said it comes every day, because we have a contract that's 3 years up. My boss will be 85. And every time I talk to him, he's, oh, we'll talk about it in 3 to 5 years. I'm like, okay, you said that 10 years ago. Now it's actually 3 to 5 years. So every time I talk to him, he goes, you got to come down. We got to talk about this. I'm like, okay, what are we going to talk about? But hoping that we can make it profitable, make it where it's not outrageous, and make a living where everybody has a living and not stressed out over certain things. And then maybe sell it. Maybe I have a son. I don't know if my son will come back up from the South. He's really never involved. He was involved as a kid. But
yeah,
but I think maybe it's a niche business. That's the whole thing about it. It's somebody has to start somewhere to start filling tubes for the first job.
Yeah.
You're not going to come out and do a million tubes. They all ask you for a million tube price, but they always say, oh, hey, can you do 500 pieces? I'm like, yeah, I'll do for the million piece price. And then I'll do the million piece price, the 500 piece price for the million piece price. Does that work for you? What are you, crazy? Thank you. Have a nice day.
That's funny. It's funny, but sadly, it's true.
I had somebody doing wishwasher, little tiny wishwasher fluid bottles. And he goes, I got a guy doing it for a nickel. I said, okay, I'll talk to you in 3 years. What do you mean? I said, because the guy's going to be out of business. And then you can pay my price. He called me 2 years ago.
I asked you about the future. I asked you the past. How about right now? What are some things that are really exciting you right now, Joe, in the business, in the industry, maybe in the clients you serve? What's something that's really getting you excited about Carillon Packaging?
I'm getting a lot of phone calls for quotes.
Okay.
To quote a lot of products, a lot of organic product, like organic fertilizers. I got some perfumes and some other stuff. But it seems with the tariffs, a lot of people are migrating back to the country and trying to get things done here. Has anything really turned in? Right now I have a quote going out for relabeling apple cider vinegar bottles. 20,000 bottles, because they were labeled wrong, and they're on the water right now coming over here. So I was like, okay.
Right.
Like my father always said, my father always never shied away from anything, always took it. And he said, that person over there might give you this. Okay, yeah, that's only a little piece going on right now, only doing 500 pieces. But you know what? You put that 500 pieces and that 2,000 pieces, you put them all together, they make up for a good part and pay the rent.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I feel energetic about what's the calls and the requests and things like that, and seeing it out.
That's great. That's great.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people don't fully appreciate what it means to be a contract manufacturing organization, especially one that deals with lots of non-durable goods. So that means you have to be incredibly agile. You have to know when to expand, when to contract. You have to know that there's never going to be that perfect equilibrium point. You're either too busy or not busy enough.
You know? Yeah. That's what happened with me with the slime glue.
Yeah.
The owner comes and goes, I'm going to make you busy. Oh, he made me busy. Let me tell you, I was busy. Well, I wasn't making any more money than I made the day before, because I get paid the same amount of money. I told him, I said, you made me busy, but you're not making me money.
Yeah.
Two different things, busy and money.
But through it all, you continue to forge ahead and have demonstrated, at least through this interview, some tremendous tenacity through some very serious adversity, and managed to keep a balance and a smile on your face through it all and keep working forward. My compliments to you on your journey. Last question for you. If somebody wanted to get in touch with you or learn more about Carillon Packaging, What's the best way to connect?
They can email me at joe@carolinpackaging.com, C-A-R-O-L-A-N, packaging, P-A-C-K-A-G-I-N-G.com. Our phone number is 973-586-8808, and our website is carolinpackaging.com.
Awesome, awesome. Joe, thanks so much for joining me on Growing Up B2B. Your story really resonates and captures what makes family businesses special, which is resilience, craftsmanship, and a deep commitment to both customers and to family. Again, we've been speaking with Joe Carolin of Carolin Packaging, and I'm Ed D'Elia, and this is Growing Up B2B. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you next time. Joe, thank you so much for joining us today.
Hey, thank you very much.
Awesome. Hey, thanks so much for tuning into Growing Up B2B. To explore more episodes and insights, visit podcast.delianet.com. And if you've enjoyed this episode, please give us a rating or review on your podcast platform of choice. Having worked with hundreds of family-led businesses across my career, and being a second-generation leader myself, I'm on a mission to help every family business I meet achieve next-level growth for their organization. So feel free also to connect with me on LinkedIn and let's support each other. You can also find out more about my company at DeliaNet.com. Again, I'm your host, Ed D'Elia, and thanks so much for joining us today. Take care.